next on KCPQ. Stay tuned for the Portfolio Doctors, Dan Osgood and Stephen Vick, investment advisor representatives for their respective investment firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed on the Portfolio Doctors are their own and do not reflect those of ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management Company LLC, or this radio station. The following information is for educational purposes only. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Welcome to the Portfolio Doctors on News Talk AM 1170 KCBQ. Your financial future depends on making sound investment decisions. Make sure you get accurate information and a weekly checkup from a source you trust. The Portfolio Doctors will see you now. Live in studio, here are Dan Osgood and Steve Vick. The Portfolio Doctors.
Welcome. Thank you again for listening to our show. This is the Portfolio Doctors. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Vick.
And second show of the new year.
That's it. Already.
Already. We're already there.
I know.
Here we go again. It's gonna be December before we know it.
I quite enjoyed last December because they were that perfect timing for Christmas being on a Thursday.
Yep.
And then New Year's Day was a Thursday. So we got I took both Fridays off, so
nice.
I had back to back weekends of 4 days. Three work days and 4 days off.
So let me guess, you paddled every day.
Yeah.
And relaxed.
Yeah. So, and you can actually sort of begin to see a hint of relaxation starting to creep in by the end of the fourth day.
Sure. Absolutely.
Which is, that's one thing about America, that since being here, no one takes vacations here, mm-hmm. ever. And it's really actually quite sad. I came from South Africa, as most listeners know, and there we got, I listen to my friends that are still there. I'm wondering if they ever work,
right.
and they're looking at us going, why the heck do you guys work so much? And
right.
I've added it up, and every decade that goes by, I do, working here versus them, I do roughly 2 years more hours than they do.
Wow.
So that's an extra 4,000 or 5,000 hours of work every decade over what they're doing in South Africa.
And we did a show earlier, well, I guess somewhere in the middle of last year, that we addressed that to some extent of the built-up vacation days that go unused, the sick days that go unused, and where that is coming from. Because there's been enough research that proves if you take those, you're a much more efficient worker. So
right.
by working and not taking those days off, it has a negative impact on the overall productivity, which
right.
impacts your job, which could cause to a lesser review, a lower raise. There's a lot of negatives that go along with not taking those breaks. It is that reset, that refresher, like you just said, just 4 days, and you could feel the relaxation
right.
kicking in.
Well, I have to say, I remember a consulting job I had many years ago, and I went to one weekend, there was a ton of work to be done, so I went in and worked, and I was shocked to find that everyone was there.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. Because I hadn't been there once. because to me, weekend's a weekend, right?
Sure.
And I went from office to office asking people what they were doing, and essentially the answer was, if you just summed it up, they were here to put in their billable time, or they were here to just finish some stuff off their desk, or they were here to... Essentially what they were saying is, I just want to be here because I want to be seen to
right.
be working.
Right.
None of them were working. None of them. I was the actually only person, because I had a deadline, that was actually working. Everyone else was just doing busy work.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it every weekend. And I went to my boss that Monday, and I went into, and I said to him right then and there, I said, I don't work weekends. I hope you understand that it's not because I'm trying to be lazy. I will give you 12 hours a day from Monday to Friday, but Saturday, Sunday, you will never see me here. I value that time off. He said, no, it's not a problem. And I ended up accelerating through the ranks and, did fine. You don't have to be seen. That's,
right.
Enjoy your downtime. It's not a crime.
Well, that's one thing, I heard this not too long ago. A company like your Googles, your Apples, that have
right.
this phenomenal, almost campus that you go work at, where they have the health spa there. They've got the daycare. They've got everything, the cafeteria, the restaurants, the bars, everything. It's like its own little city.
Yeah.
But to have that perk, it is kind of that unwritten law that you will be here 80 hours a week or more. And at some point, you have to kind of weigh that back and forth and say, yeah, it's great, I work for Google, or yeah, it's great, I work for Apple. But my quality of life, great, I have a wonderful place where I work because I can do anything I want, but I never get to because I'm working 80 hours a week.
I read a great
cartoon. What's the real benefit?
Yeah, I read a great cartoon strip about that in that Doonesbury or whatever, the guy who writes those cartoon strips about offices. And it even mentioned Google. It said the guy was there and he was touting how, you know, at Google, we can do 30 hours a week of just brainstorming where we can literally just sit in groups and try and work out what the next big thing is. And the guy goes, and you also have to do your 40 hours a week work, right? And he goes, oh, yeah. And he said, have you not just added those two together to work out how many hours you're working?
Nope.
I mean, it's like, you can categorize it as whatever you want.
Right.
You're still working.
Yeah, the brainstorming should be counted in the
work 40,
hour,
yeah, right? Exactly. So, anyway.
Yes. So that's... As
another
usual.
Sidetrack from the portfolio.
I was going to say, as usual, we've gotten completely sidetracked from what we intend to talk about. Last week, we talked a fair amount about kind of New Year's resolutions. It was the first show of the year, the typical, we aren't going to make predictions. We did that at the last show of the year, even though we really were not allowed to come out and say the market's going to go up, the market's going to go down, any of that. Even if we feel one way or the other, there are some regulatory bodies that won't let us have a complete opinion. But with that, with the resolutions, one thing that's probably a common theme that people would talk about is getting their credit in order, whether it's paying off credit cards, paying off a mortgage, or just consolidating things or simplifying it so that you, so it's a manageable issue. I mean, credit debt in our country is at ridiculous levels.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's off the chart. But the first thing in that is we're in a low interest rate environment, and everyone's scratching for yield. And I don't know how many times you're going to beat this thing stick, but if your credit cards are charging you 12 to 15%, which most of them seem
some are higher.
Yeah.
If you're carrying a balance, you might be paying 18%+.
Yeah. And so if you can pay those down or off, I mean, it's equivalent to earning 12 to 18% on that money.
Right.
And so, I mean, you've got to do that. That's the biggest no-brainer ever.
Yeah, that would be the equivalent of putting money aside.
Correct.
And I think that's where it gets a little bit lost, because you always hear, oh, you have to save X amount, you have to do this, you have to do that. You have to address outstanding debts and see what those interest rates are. If you're talking about a mortgage that's a 3% mortgage, that shouldn't be anywhere
that's
working
your
its
lowest
way.
Payment.
Right.
Pay the minimum.
Yeah, that should not be a priority to try to get that out of the picture. Unless cash flow is a big issue for you, but that's a totally different topic.
Then you need to sell your house. Seriously, if cash flow is an issue and you can't afford your bills and you're struggling to hang on to something, I mean, you need to look at offloading stuff.
Right.
As hard as it might sound, you know, maybe you don't need the country club or the private health club. You know, maybe running on the beach is good enough. You know, I mean, seriously, if you're struggling to pay your bills because cash flow is a problem, you need to take a hard, honest look at what your bills are and work out which are the important ones. Maybe it's not selling your house. Maybe it's getting rid of some of the perks that you feel you deserve. And then you need to decide, are the perks more important or is the house more important?
Right.
But something's got to go, right? Otherwise, you just talking about the weekend and how much fun downtime is and getting the stress off you, the quickest way to get stress onto you is to have a paycheck of, let's say, $8,000 a month and your bills are $9,000.
Right.
You want to talk about stress, you know, every month you're going backwards $1,000.
So maybe this, as far as resolutions, we both kind of determined that neither of us really believe in making a New Year's resolution versus just trying to become more efficient or
right.
or setting goals. Maybe a budget, just taking a look at a budget, not necessarily just limiting how much you can spend, but just take a look at a budget and see, like you said, identify where you're spending money and see if it's all necessary if you're having problems.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
with cash flow especially.
Yeah, you think about this, the stresses of cash flow, right? Number one, it's probably going to impact your marriage, assume you mm-hmm. married. Number two, it's going to impact your health because you're going to be so wound up that you could have a heart attack or a stroke any minute right. of the day. So, and it's such an easy fix, and really all of it is tied up with ego. If you just mm-hmm. look at yourself in the mirror and say, do I really need this? And do I really need to keep up with the Joneses? Or would I rather have a enjoyable life, you know, where I can maybe take the stress off, my wife and I can be happier with each other. Yeah, we're not in the mansion anymore. We're in something we can afford. But right. that becomes, as long as your mindset changes, it's not that big of an issue.
Suddenly life's much more enjoyable.
Yeah, suddenly you are taking that overseas trip, mm-hmm. you know, and your friends aren't, or they are, but they're wondering how they're going to pay it, and you don't have to worry because you come back and it's already paid off.
Right, you know? Which again kind of goes back to that whole budget. If you're earmarking money for a vacation fund, you can spend it with no guilt.
Correct.
You don't have to worry. You know that money has been set aside entirely for that trip.
That's such a good point, Dan, because the person who set it aside and has budgeted for it goes there and has a grand old time.
Right.
Doesn't worry about it.
Enjoys every minute.
The other crowd who's financing everything and wondering how they're going to pay for it, they stressed out even while they're there.
Right.
So it's why I even go.
Right.
Seriously.
Yep. Oh, you can see those people sometimes when you're on a beach.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, so if you need any help with anything like that, there are plenty of resources out there. We would love to be one for you. If you have questions or you're struggling with a budget, we can help point you in the right direction. Most people, it's as simple as just laying things out and taking a look at them. Almost always there's one red flag that's waving right in front of your face that says, we're spending too much money on this. And it's a very simple fix where it's okay, instead of 7 days, we only need to do this twice a week or three times a week. And guess what? Now you've got a lot of extra money, whatever right. that is. So we'll stick around. When we come back, we'll talk a little more on credit and some interesting things as far as mortgages go. And leading into the new year, you're listening to the Portfolio Doctors, KCBQ 1170.
Keep up with KCBQ hosts and current events. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Look for the icons online at kcbq.com.
Discover Bookkeeping Made Easy, your source for bookkeeping and accounting solutions. Get the tools you need to succeed. Bookkeeping Made Easy gives clients personal attention with insightful advice for your expenses, invoices, payables, inventory control, reconciliations, financial statements, and tax preparation. Call now for your free initial consultation, 858-822-9239. Energy, expertise, close personal attention. Bookkeeping Made Easy, 858-822-9239.
Remember those warm, sun-filled days relaxing on the beach in Hawaii? Can't wait to go again? Well, now you can have a taste of Hawaii delivered to your door by going online and ordering some melt-in-your-mouth deliciousness from HawaiiFudge.com. What better way to shake off the stresses of the world than biting into a smooth, creamy chocolate macadamia nut sensation? Or how about our Kona Coffee Lava Flow? Just go to HawaiiFudge.com and place your order online today. That's HawaiiFudge.com.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the U.S. own mutual funds. Now, I wonder how many of those people have read all the fine print associated with those investments. The good news is you don't have to figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is a certified financial planner and actually a friend. Through his website, freeinvestmentaudit.com, he will do a free risk and cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much in fees are you paying for the investments you have? If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, go to freeinvestmentaudit.com right now and get your free analysis. You deserve to know what your investments are really costing you. FreeInvestmentAudit.com. That's FreeInvestmentAudit.com. That's FreeInvestmentAudit.com.
1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back. It is the Portfolio Doctors. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Bick.
And so far this year, I forgot to mention this, but we have between us over 50 years of financial industry experience.
Yes, we do. We've traded and invested in pretty much everything.
Well, you have.
I was going to say I haven't invested in an oil well, but I did invest in oil drilling equipment once.
That turned out very badly. That was probably equipment leasing investment.
It was not a good investment.
Yeah, there was a company when I first got in this industry, and it was all types of equipment leasing or something like that. And I never fully understood what they were trying to tell me they did. So I kind of, even before I knew really who Warren Buffett was, I followed his principles and said, if I'm not understanding this, there's no way I'm going to try to explain it to a client and have them invest in this. So I steered clear of that.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that was a good decision.
I'm sure it probably was.
Today so far, we're just kind of carrying over from last week's show, talking a little bit about resolutions and the idea of if you have credit card debt, mortgage debt, private loans, personal loans, any types of things that are kind of a burden on you, that are really weighing on you, that you're really concerned about, that are or causing cash flow issues like we just finished the previous segment with, you need to just take a look. Take a look, map everything out, write it down on paper, and there are a lot of resources. You can just go, it's as simple as go to Google, type in budget template, and you will see a list of different items that people tend to overlook when it comes to adding up all the things you spend money on. Like going out to dinner seems to be the most common thing people overlook because you have to eat. But the reality is, do you need to spend $30 or $40 or $50 a night eating out at a restaurant rather than buy some groceries and make that same meal for $5 at home? That can go a long way if you map that out over the course of a year. But Steve, you had some pretty interesting info we were talking about at lunch regarding mortgages, which I was a little surprised.
It's even sort of beyond that. There's a whole bunch of statistics. The Federal Reserve did a study in 2013, and I think this is low, but they say that about 38% of U.S. families carry credit card debt, and with the median being about $2,300. Now, I don't know anyone who doesn't have some form of credit card debt.
The only way I could maybe see that is when you spread it out across the entire country. There are probably parts where there's next to none.
Probably.
And maybe that offsets it. But I know the stats I've seen, especially here in California, it's like 70 or 80%,
I think. That's what I would think. And it's a heck of a lot higher than $2,300.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I heard something a week ago that was 13,000 at least.
That makes more sense to me.
It might have even been a little bit higher.
Well, that makes me feel better because I'm around about 13,000. So now I'm better than average.
you're right in there.
And then they said there approximately 86% of families own a car and own a median amount of $14,000 on it.
Okay.
The automobile debt.
So maybe they're separating out all the different debts.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, but I don't know. But I mean, $14,000 on an auto loan, and I don't know what auto loans typically run in terms of interest rates, but those are roughly normally at least 7 or 8%, right?
Well, there's for the last handful of years, there's been a lot of introductory offers.
Yeah.
Where I've seen 0%.
Right.
1.9%.
But you are paying for that somewhere because the price is probably a little bit higher than if you paid cash, right? So they're factoring that in terms of you're getting no interest, but you're financing it somehow.
Right.
And then the interesting one that we had was 65% of families own their primary residence. with 43% have mortgages on them.
I thought that number seemed high, but the more I've thought about it, it probably has a factor to do with the baby boomers.
Yeah.
That's a generation that was a saving generation. That's the largest wealth ever in the history of the country. So that does make sense. That generation tended to stay in the same house.
But now they
probably have paid those off.
And it's paid off, right? If you think about a house, the way you make money on a house is ultimately through leverage.
Mm-hmm.
So it might, in certain instances, and let's assume you have a house and it's free and clear and it's worth, I don't know, let's just say $300,000. And it's free and clear, and it's growing at, let's say, 3% a year. You're making $9,000 a year on that house, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could make sense to not necessarily max it out and leverage it up to $250,000 again, but it could make sense to take $50,000, $60,000, you know, 15, 20% of the equity out of that house.
Mm-hmm.
Use that money to invest, not go and spend willy-nilly on a...
Don't just buy a new car.
Yeah, jokes aside, a new car might be an answer, because let's assume you have to buy, your car's done, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your car's done, you have to get a new car, you have to get a car, and let's just assume your car, based on this number, is $15,000, $20,000. I don't know what you can get as a car with much less than that these days, but let's assume you buy a $20,000 car and you're going to finance it, right? And it's going to be at 7, 8%, because I think that's around about where car financing is. Or even if it's at a 1% interest rate, if you paid cash, it would equate to about that 6-7%, right? It could be advisable to take that mortgage off your house at 3.
Right.
Pay that off in cash and then pay your mortgage down, because on top of that, you're getting the savings against your taxes.
Right, the tax deduction of the interest. So that really reduces that rate from 3 to potentially 2.
Yeah, but you have to, the key thing to this whole thing, and I don't want everyone to go, oh, yay, the piggy bank's back again, you know?
Right.
Because it's not. The thing where people get into trouble with this is when they're not disciplined and they just look at it as a piggy bank.
Right.
If you're disciplined and you're taking, like, let's say you do have credit card debt and your house is free and clear, and you take some money off your house and you pay off your credit cards, so long as you don't run those credit cards back up again,
mm-hmm.
That's a wise move. But if you're just going to take it off, pay it out of your house, and then run those credit cards straight back up to 100 again, you're wasting your time.
Right, because then you get in a pretty vicious, endless loop that...
Now your one asset, and that's why people typically don't touch the house, because they view it as my one asset is, and it's sort of like a lock. And people look at it in terms of mental accounting, where they've accounted for the house in one quadrant of their brain, and they're not going to therefore touch that quadrant. But it's funny, they won't touch the house, but they'll quickly run out and try and take money out of their 401k or whatever, which is even more of a disastrous idea. But these are ways to really, if you want to get yourself out of debt and you want to pay off these credit cards and the higher interest rate bills, it's not that hard. You just have to be disciplined, and you've got to attack with full force the highest balance. So pay everything else with a minimum payment, and the one that's the highest interest, you max out as much money as you can against that card and get that thing paid off. Then you turn your attention to the next one.
And we've talked about this before as well. Something else you can do: make a phone call to those credit card companies.
Right.
And say, I'm going to transfer this balance if you won't work with me on the rate. And more often than not, you can get it reduced, maybe not to zero or a super low rate, but any savings, if you're paying 18% and they'll cut it to 10, that's a huge savings to you.
Get it that far.
Even if it's only to 12 or something,
right.
Any reduction is a huge savings for you.
Yeah.
But ideally, concept would be pay it off as quick as possible.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting part is, and this is always the frustrating part for consumers, is the people who most desperately need the interest rate cut because they're struggling to make the payment, the banks look at it differently. They go, wow, you're a high risk, we're going to charge higher interest
rates.
And the people who really don't really bother with it, doesn't matter what the interest rate is, we can handle this payment, they end up with the low interest rates because the banks go, oh, they're a lower risk, they're not going to default. And that's really a little bit of an issue, right? It's
a little bit
almost
backwards.
Looking at it backwards. It's like, instead of them saying, let's help the poor people that can't pay and maybe we'll get a lower default rate on our loans, mm-hmm. they always look at it from a risk perspective. And they're saying the more risk you are in terms of paying it back, the less chance we have of getting a reduction in interest
right.
rates.
Well, I do have some stats. I pulled this up while we're talking. And this is current through December of 2014. Mm-hmm. The U.S. household consumer debt, average credit card debt is $15,611.
Okay. That
looks like in
better.
The U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
The average mortgage debt is $150,000.
Okay.
Or $155,000.
Okay.
And the average student loan debt is $32,000.
Yeah, and they found out based on that, 75% of all families have some kind of debt, and they're saying that the average amount here is $60,000, and couples that have at least one kid, on average, they owe $125,000.
Just for all types of debt, just, all in.
Summed in, which seems low. I think your numbers are more accurate.
Well, this is supposedly through December of 2014.
So maybe this is 2013. So did we just go on an absolute binge in 2014 and crank up? I know there was a lot of borrowing that was going on in 2014.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
I mean, if you can get it at that 3% interest, go right ahead. But
sure.
If you're getting it at 12, 14, don't do it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, because we understand there are situations where there's no other option where you have to do that.
Yeah.
But understand, if you have to do that, you need to be disciplined, like Steve was just mentioning. Follow a process to get that paid off as quick as possible.
Right.
Because you're only hurting yourself. You can pay yourself off and save yourself all that money. So,
correct.
Well, stick around. We'll be right back. We'll maybe talk a little more credit here and then we'll lead into something else that has to do with being liquid. You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors, KCBQ 1170.
Keep up with KCBQ hosts and current events. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Look for the icons online at kcbq.com.
Remember those warm, sun-filled days relaxing on the beach in Hawaii? Can't wait to go again? Well, now you can have a taste of Hawaii delivered to your door by going online and ordering some melt-in-your-mouth deliciousness from HawaiiFudge.com. What better way to shake off the stresses of the world than biting into a smooth, creamy chocolate macadamia nut sensation? Or how about our Kona Coffee Lava Flow? Just go to HawaiiFudge.com and place your order online today. That's HawaiiFudge.com.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the U.S. own mutual funds. Now, I wonder how many of those people have read all the fine print associated with those investments. The good news is you don't have to figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is a certified financial planner and actually a friend. Through his website, freeinvestmentaudit.com, he will do a free risk and cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much in fees are you paying for the investments you have? If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, go to freeinvestmentaudit.com right now and get your free analysis. You deserve to know what your investments are really costing you. Freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com.
1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. It is The Portfolio Doctors. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Bick.
Been talking a little bit, I guess, New Year's resolutions. Looking at a budget as maybe more important than a resolution is just take a look, see where the money's going, and see if anything needs to be adjusted. Maybe everything you're doing is perfect. It's just validation for that. That's a good feeling to take a look at a budget and say, hey, I've got everything under control. And in many cases, I've found when I sit with people and help them work through a budget, it's actually a total opposite of what they expect. Most people expect when I do a budget, that's going to limit how much money I can spend. I'm not going to be able to do things I want to do. And the reality is, in many cases, once you've earmarked money and you're saving the appropriate amounts, you find that you actually have more money available to spend, and you can spend it without the guilt that comes along with spending it without knowing for sure if it's okay. Like we talked about that vacation. When you've earmarked and you've set money aside entirely for a vacation, and then you go on that vacation, you enjoy it much more than someone who's charging it, hoping they're going to figure out how to pay that bill off down the road, because right. that money is earmarked. It's entirely for that purpose, and you don't have to be guilty. You can enjoy that trip or whatever that reward is that you're saving for, because that's the purpose of that money. That's what you set it out to accomplish.
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, most people, if they just cut out that impulse buy mm-hmm. every month, and it's probably more than one, it's probably one or two a week.
Can't do that. That would put Costco out of business.
Well, if you did, you would suddenly find that you have an extra $200, $300, $400 a month in your wallet. Mm-hmm. And that starts adding up pretty quick.
Absolutely. Think about that. Just 1 year.
$3,000.
Even if it was just $100 a month,
right.
That's $1,200. That's probably a pretty nice vacation.
I would hope so. You know,
there's a lot of really fun places you can go for $1,200.
Without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I mean, these are the types of things that you just really have to try and be a little bit more disciplined about. But, you know, we were talking about interest earlier and the interest rates. I mean, interest rates have remained low for so long. It's, you know, everyone's still once again thinking it's got to be this year. It's got to be this year. Interest rates have got to go up. And, you know, there's one thing that the issue with it is, and we talked about it at the last show, it all comes down to consumer confidence, really, mm-hmm. at this point in time. Because there's this, in economics, there's this ISLM line. Or I know, it's like supply-demand curve.
Sure.
Right? And essentially, the IS is investment and savings. And the LM is liquidity and money. Okay, so we've got lots of liquidity. What that's saying is we've got lots of liquidity. The Fed, we all know they've pumped $4 or $5 sure. trillion dollars into the market. So there's tons of liquidity.
And they've not taken a penny of it out.
No. And we've got interest rates that are seriously low. Now, typically, basically what the chart or this theory says is when you've got low interest rates, people move money from savings to investment, and therefore it starts supercharging the economy. So if you keep interest rates low, the investment line starts moving and ultimately have growth in GDP. The problem is when you've got consumer sentiment that's been so low, and also business sentiment, and the outlook is just so pessimistic, which I'm not certain if that's the case anymore. We'll get to that in a second. But in the past, it's been so pessimistic that income, that investment and savings line doesn't connect to the liquidity line. So okay. you've got this gap. So it doesn't matter how much liquidity you have or how low interest rates go, it doesn't boost investment. And that's called the liquidity trap.
Okay,
because essentially it's like we've got tons of liquidity, but it's not doing what we need it to do. It's not, and essentially what the US has had, and most parts of the globe, they've been under the guise that if we just keep pumping liquidity into the market and we keep interest rates low, that it will ultimately result in a massive stimulus to the economy. And you would have thought $3 trillion ago that should have worked, and it didn't. And it's mainly because of that fear and that pessimism. It's like, oh yeah, right, we've seen all this twice or three times. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw it in 2000, we saw it in 2007 or 8. We don't want to see it again. So people have remained on the sidelines. But as we discussed in the last show, the Q3 GDP numbers came out and they were up supposedly 5% GDP growth. That's, I would expect that plus a low oil price to feed into the consumer sentiment numbers, which might mean there's more money in people's pockets just because they're spending less at the pump. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are still low. And at some point, maybe that's the cog that really gets the wheels turning and then reconnects these two lines, getting us out of the liquidity trap. And here we go. Now, of course, the next question is, well, if that's the case, then doesn't the Federal Reserve have to now raise interest rates? And there's a chance they might, but we've discussed this as well. I mean, and interest rates are pretty much zero now. So if they raised them even up to 1%, I mean, that would be a huge move. If you think back to the, what was it, 03, 04, when they started raising interest rates again, they were doing it
Greenspan days.
Yeah, then quarter percentage increments every like 3 months, right? So to even get you to 1%, I would say you're probably looking at middle of next year.
Right.
Right, at that speed. Because they're not going to probably, it doesn't look like they'll do anything for the first
half. Yeah, unless there's some shocking fourth quarter numbers that get released, there's not going to be a hurry. They've stated it over and over that they are not going to be quick.
No.
I know Ben Bernanke's group of the Fed, they were, they made it pretty clear that they were never going to react too quickly to inflation showing itself.
And Yellen's even more.
Right. It appears that she's going to follow that same path. So I think we could see inflation really trying to really get going if it were to ever show up before you see any kind of reaction from the Fed. Because they don't want to make a mistake of trying to put out inflation before it really gets going and causing deflation.
Well, exactly that. And also, I mean, when they all studied the Great Depression and they all seemed to think that that was one of the reasons that we ended up there was because the Fed jumped into the breach too quickly. So, I mean, I think that even if interest rates do start ticking up slightly, you for the next 2 years at least, I'll be surprised if you see a 10-year note cross, you know, 3.5-4%. And if that's the case, these interest rates are here for an extended period of time still. So I think that in terms of credit and getting yourself into good shape credit-wise, there's still an opportunity for the next year or two with low interest rates to be able to dig yourself out of whatever hole you've got, and hopefully by the time interest rates starts going up, you're able to benefit from it by investing into those types of things that yield versus going, oh my word, my interest rates on my credit cards and my auto loans and my houses have all gone up and I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm now completely caught and I can't make any of my payments. So I think you've got to use this time of the low interest rates to unload as much of this debt as you can while you still can.
Well, and again, it's a case where if you are able to do some of this, you need to stay disciplined and not allow you to get yourself back into the same situation. Take advantage of the fact that these rates are so low and use this opportunity to get your debt burden in at least into a manageable form, whether that's locking in some low interest rates, maybe consolidate. If you have large amounts of debt, consolidate into one slightly lower, even if it's slightly higher than maybe a couple of your loans. If you can get it all together in one fixed manageable payment, that's going to go a long ways towards your future. If rates start spiking up and the other things you have could fluctuate, it's better to know exactly what you're going to be paying and be able to budget for that than to not be sure and then 2 years from now have interest rates start really going up and have your payment going up. And now all of a sudden, instead of a $500 a month payment, you've got a $700 or an $800 payment on the same amount of money.
Which is, and as you say that, you put that now in terms of Federal Reserve and the government, right?
Even want to talk about how much they're going to be paying.
Well, that's really one of the reasons why I believe that these interest rates, while I know market forces will ultimately take control and you'll eventually get a spike in interest rates, but if interest rates went to 6%, let's say, from pretty close to zero, right, and the majority of the Fed debt is in short-term notes, you know, they haven't done a lot of 30 years out
right.
there, so stuff's maturing all the time. If that were to spike to 6%, I mean, you would see the deficit in at the White House spiral into the trillions straight away, because you've got, call it $20 trillion of debt at essentially zero. I think we're paying like $600 or $700 billion a year in interest on that money. And if you took that 20 and took it to 6 or 7%, that's an extra $800 billion in interest.
Yeah,
I mean, so that's taken
you're talking monopoly money again.
But the problem is to balance a budget.
Yeah,
is impossible. At that point, you can't.
Now, would it be possible, because this is shorter term debt that they primarily own, as it pays off, just take that money back out of the system?
Yeah, but
would that help?
How?
Yeah.
You can't if you're running a deficit. You've got to finance your deficit.
Okay.
So you can't take it out. That's where people go, oh, well, it's just the government deficit. It's just White House, Washington, you know. Da, da. No.
They've got that deficit's got to
be
mentality, paid,
right?
Right.
And it's paid by the Treasury issuing more bonds and people buying them. Mm-hmm. But then you're issuing, until you balance the budget, well, you can't get it out.
Yeah,
you can get part of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet can be taken down to zero.
Okay.
But the Treasury is no.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And that's really the piece that I'm talking about.
Okay. But as rates are going up, then other nations would possibly have more interest in investing and buying up some of that debt.
Maybe. It comes back to how good of a credit are we. Remember how we were talking about the people who are the worst credit can't get financed or the interest rate lower?
Here we are.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, stick around. We'll keep debating this back and forth and see how, and if there is a solution to what the Fed has created.
Will they listen to us, though?
We'll see. You are listening to The Portfolio Doctors. This is KCBQ 1170. We'll be right back.
Keep up with KCBQ hosts and current events. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Look for the icons online at kcbq.com.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the U.S. own mutual funds. Now, I wonder how many of those people have read all the fine print associated with those investments. The good news is you don't have to figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is a certified financial planner and actually a friend. Through his website, freeinvestmentaudit.com, he will do a free risk and cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much in fees are you paying for the investments you have? If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, go to freeinvestmentaudit.com right now and get your free analysis. You deserve to know what your investments are really costing you. freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com.
1170 KCBQ.
All right, heading down the home stretch. Welcome back. It is The Portfolio Doctors. My name is Dan Osgood.
And I'm Steve Bick.
And we ended up with a theme, although we maybe didn't intend it, of just credit and how it applies to individuals. And then we kind of morphed towards our government, our global economy.
Well,
here.
I think that the important thing for our listeners to realize once again is just how interrelated all this stuff is.
Right. Going back to the global economy that we
Because we were now talking about, well, what happens if interest rates go up? How is this going to affect you? And then I pointed out, well, how's that going to affect the government? And it's going to have a major impact, which means they're definitely of the mindset to keep interest rates as low as possible so they can actually service their debt, right?
Right.
And so not that they can control interest rates completely, but they've gone push them down to significantly lower levels than they should be. And then when you take the global outlook and you look at, say, Germany and Europe and Japan and China and places like that, and you see their economies sputtering and stuttering along, you can then get a feel for, well, the chances of our interest rates starting to spike higher in the near term isn't that high. The probability
right.
isn't that high, because those countries, as we explained when we were talking about the jet airliner last week, when those types of economies are exporting all of their problems to America. So they're cutting costs and cutting prices and trying to, you know, fight and save their necks. Mm-hmm. And that then brings the price of everything down. So you've then got a deflationary type outlook, and that means interest rates stay low. So, I mean, we've all got, I think, time still to fix our balance sheets at home and take it all the way back to the micro level again, which is really the most important thing in everyone's lives, and that's themselves, and try and work out, okay, so we've got a sense that the low interest rates are here to stay for a while. While they're here, please take this opportunity, and it's been here now for 4 or 5 years already, but it's going to be here for a little bit longer, so take this opportunity to refinance your house, try and drive your credit card balances or interest rates down, try and maybe even refinance your vehicle if you can to get a lower interest rate.
Right, that's becoming a more common practice where institutions will allow you to refinance an automobile, which in the past I remember trying to do that one time many years ago, and they said, oh, no, we don't do that, sorry.
Well, I don't know why they do it now, because the moment you drive that car off the lot, it's down. You owe more than what the car's worth.
Right.
You know, it's like a short sale instantly.
unless you paid down principal immediately.
Yeah.
Or chipping away.
Yeah. So, or if you get, like in my case, we have got a six-year-old Lexus, and so it's paid off, and, you know, I refuse to go and buy another car because it's going just fine, you know.
Right, you might be able to go get a couple $1,000s from that.
You think?
Maybe, I don't know.
Might be in the market. No.
There you go.
That's the last thing. I'm trying to pay myself out of completely.
A quickly depreciating asset is not a good thing to have a loan against.
Exactly. But, I mean, these are just jokes aside. You know, you want to try and offload all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the mindset in the past was, wow, my Lexus is 3-4 years old. I better get a new one. Why exactly? It's only got 30 or 40,000 miles on it, or in my case, you know, there I am now 6 or 7 years. It's only got 80,000. That car, touch wood, assuming I take good care of it, should last 150, 200,000 miles.
Right.
So that means, I mean, I'm going to be 70 by the time I actually need to get a new car.
Right.
You don't have to get a new car. That's just a depreciating asset.
Well, and that goes back to that whole budgeting and taking a look at, do you really need things? Because there are plenty of people that they just, every couple of years, go buy a new car.
Yeah, of course. Because.
Right.
It's like, do you need a new cell phone tomorrow? Well, maybe those things outdate quicker.
But the new Apple phone, whenever it comes out, you should go stand in line a week before just to get that
first
one.
Remember, we saw those people standing outside the Apple store, just this massive line of people standing there to get the new Apple phone because they have to. I mean, seriously, did any of those people, I bet they all still had an Apple 5.
I'm sure.
Or it was the 5, right? They were getting the 6.
Yeah, I think they were upgrading
so
to
everyone
the 6.
Had the 5. I mean, how bad was their 5?
Right.
I'll tell you right now, it's way better than my piece of junk that I keep having to take bits of memory out of there because I keep apparently maxing out my memory. I need a new phone. Essentially, my phone is at the end of its life, right? And you do get to certain situations where your stuff is at the end of its life. And that's when you upgrade or replace.
Right.
But this constant cycle of having to do it, having to do it, having to do it, that is why people suddenly find at the end of the day their paycheck just doesn't cover all of the expenses.
Right. You're kind of creating that vacuum almost, just sucking every penny you make out.
Exactly. And you know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day where they're like, well, other people are doing this and they're going to these out to eat a lot and, you know, we can't. And the other side of it is, if you think back in time, if you got to eat, let's say, once a month or once every 6 weeks, because it's a special occasion, which was literally how I grew up. Back in those days, it was expensive to go to restaurants. Nowadays,
it was the same thing for me.
It was great. You went out. Everyone was so excited. It was such a magical evening. Everyone was, wow, you know, it meant something. Now it's like, oh, we don't feel like cooking. Let's just go eat out.
Right.
It means nothing. It's the same with the movies and places like that. It's like if you go to just the movie you want to see rather than every weekend, it means something, you know? So it doesn't have to be a negative that you can't do these things every week.
I fully agree. I do remember that. There was a Mexican restaurant just down the road from where we lived, and it was always, whenever we found out we were going there, that was the greatest thing ever, that we were going to be going to this restaurant and eating out. Because it was so rare.
Right. And so now it's the must-have society. Mm-hmm. Must have it, and you've got to have it right now.
And it's awfully convenient.
Yeah, I know.
But I've had that where I ask my kids, say, hey, we're going to go out to dinner tonight. Where do you want to go? And regularly they'll say, we don't want to go out to dinner. We want to just stay home and eat dinner at home.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, okay.
Yeah, back to the store.
Yeah.
Most of the time
go open the cupboards again.
Yeah, when you don't have anything in there to eat. Yep.
Darn, I got to go shopping.
Exactly. Which is, once again, back to planning, you know. Just little things that you can do. I mean, even if you just plan like that meal idea, right? Mm-hmm. You think about that. If you plan properly, now you drove to the store, you picked up something for dinner, you drove back, right? all that gas you wasted versus if you'd planned properly and you'd got enough, all the groceries once
right.
in the cupboard, and you wouldn't. So you now saved yourself an extra $5 or $10 on driving to the store, not to mention your time.
You know, what was it? Last week's show, you talked about the Parkinson's law.
Yeah.
And just basically that being about procrastination. Yeah. It's something that I've seen in real life, and then I read something about it after I had done this just experimentally at home, was literally writing out a menu for the week.
Yeah.
And shopping accordingly, which goes right to what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
It's much more efficient because you know what you're shopping for. And when you have it written out, it makes it so much easier to get food ready. Because that's, I think, one of the things people fall back on is it's such a pain to go make a meal and serve it to everyone. But the reality was, when we had it written out, especially with little kids, we prefer to do that so that they're eating a more balanced diet.
Yep.
It was so much easier than just coming home and saying, oh, what are we going to have for dinner? Even though maybe we had plenty of food items, just trying to go through the process of figuring out what you're going to have and put it all together and make that meal. That was a bigger challenge. But when we knew exactly what we were going to have, it was easy. You walk in the house, okay, we're having this, bang, 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 it's done, it's ready, we're eating. And it was much more efficient, both on time and on money.
Well, here's the other thing that it saves you. Like, for example, you go to Costco. That's possibly the cheapest place to get your food from, right? And then if you've planned it out, so now you've got this massive steak, you don't have to cook the whole thing and wonder what you're going to do with it. You can say, well, we're going to have, you know, maybe carne asada on Thursday, so I'll chop a big chunk of this off, cut it into small slices for that,
right.
And then you've got...
Slap it in marinade and let it be there. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those types of things, there's so many ways for everyone to save money and become out the other side so much more happier and wealthier that, I mean, that's why we're here, just to help everyone, and this is a very simple solution.
Right. This is not just about how to invest your money.
Correct.
I mean, the reality is, once you really realize and look at the big picture, how you invest your money is actually a much smaller part of the picture than you think right now. Most people, because of what goes on TV and in the media of all varieties, whether it's internet, magazines, papers, CNBC, they really are trying to scare you into doing something because there's money to be made by the people that are paying to advertise in every form of media. And there are simple things that you can do that just make all of that so irrelevant that it doesn't matter. And that's why we're here. Most of our shows are built on ideas we get from questions that come in from listeners. So any questions that comes up, please email us. You can give us a call. Reach out. It's best way to get a hold of us. Email is steve@theportfoliodoctors.com. My email is dan@theportfoliodoctors.com. We also have all of our past shows. You hear us reference back to those. You can look us up on iTunes. They are all available there.
And indexed, I think.
I think so. I believe they are. Well. Yep, there's a nice little summary. So thank you again for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. It's Portfolio Doctors, KCBQ 11.7.
You've been listening to The Portfolio Doctors on News Talk AM 1170 KCBQ in San Diego. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com. Or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guest on this program, please call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250. Learn more about the show online at theportfoliodoctors.com. Portfolio Doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, investment advisor representatives for their respective investment firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed on the Portfolio Doctors are their own. They do not reflect those of ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management Company LLC, or this radio station. The information you heard is for educational purposes only. No listener should assume that the discussions serve as a substitute for personal advice from ACAS LLC or Cottingham Management Company LLC. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice.